Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and it's going to be fun tonight. It's going to be very exciting as we face these times are kind of a portal of possibility, of transformation. But I have a guest tonight who's pretty astute about talking about that, whether you're referring to astrology, which is kind of your main thing at first, or just super spiritual growth and transcendence. So welcome to the show, Elias from Hawaii. Hi, Elias.
Hi.
So what is star genesis? I almost said generous. That's possibly right too, isn't it?
Star genesis is something that came to me through dreams and visions and guided experiences over a long period of time and was born in 1994. And has been developing ever since, and it's the research and then the applied embodied life that research leads to, not research just as to what planets do in houses and such, but research into what our relation to the cosmos can be now that we've bottomed out into the earthbound human consciousness. What will we do from here? So it's a star research into all that and then applying it to each individual and also to all of us.
So what does that mean that astrologically you look at someone and see how their relationship is to the cosmos? Can you talk about us getting beyond the third dimension or the earth plane?
Well, what's happening is that each one of us is being challenged on the underside. Mm-hmm. To grapple with collective tragedy and downfall and ruin, at least as a melodrama, as a tremendous melodrama. And each one of us is being challenged in the overview to wake up to who we really are, what we're doing here just in time, so that we can participate in a tremendous planetary transformation and help to make it possible.
And that's the 2012 shift we've been all excited
yes,
about.
Yes, it's actually a 2012 to 2015 shift, keying on Uranus square Pluto, happening seven times between late June of 2012 and March of 2015.
Well, people have probably heard some version of this, but I'd like you to restate it for us so we can understand what the Uranus-Pluto squares are.
Uranus is trying to get us to see again, as we've seen in ancient times, to see already, as we will be seeing in the age of Aquaria, that's right upon us now. It's a wake-up call to see, to understand, to fathom, to go with, to move with an expanding futuristic state of consciousness. Pluto, meanwhile, which is very, very strong these days, is bringing a very different message. And what Pluto is saying is that you have to go under and through, which means you have to grapple with whatever in you is stopping you. You have to grapple with whatever in the world is stopping us, and you have to come to terms with it, and you have to both clear it completely and yet also unite with its kind of core, because everything we've been doing was what we needed to do, and nothing is a mistake or an accident.
So when you're saying grapple with what's holding us, it can be like fears or patterns from other lives, or how would you explain that?
Yes, and it can also be a place in each one of us that doesn't want to, refuses to, cannot, will not go forward in evolution, feels rather the pull backward, that's susceptible to conditionings and programmings, that tends to take on the ancestors and the collective and keep doing the same things in the same ways and remembering falsely. We have a very heavy false memory syndrome going on collectively where we remember events and experiences, but we don't remember who we were in them and why they happened and where they took us. And so our memory is the most faulty of all, and that's what's making people, whenever they recapitulate the past over and over and over and over again, they don't get the lesson, and that's why it has to keep going around. They're not getting that it's about who they are, not what happened to them.
But it's interesting because that requires people willing to empower themselves instead of, what, just react to life and, you
yes.
know.
yes,
attached to it, the social essence is, or something.
That's what we're trying to train people now in, how to connect things rather than have them keep separating further.
It's interesting because here we've got this, I mean, we'll get farther into your transcendent work because that's what I really love about, I'm very excited about it. But it's interesting that we're having this kind of challenge in 2012 when there's an election coming up and the separation, as you called it, is absolutely horrendous right now, isn't it? The trust, mm-hmm. the issues.
Yeah, we're experiencing polarization as though there were no tomorrow, as though there, all we can do is sort of fight one another, fight ourselves, fight life, have everything fight against us.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're dramatizing.
But it's interesting. We're dramatizing that collectively, aren't we? But isn't there mm-hmm. a huge rising tide on more on the consciousness level that you're speaking of as well?
The main thing that I'm aware of is that we have a vision that is coming toward us from our future selves. And if we can telepathically receive the message, we suddenly find ourselves able to see things and understand things we never could before. I see that as the movement of Jupiter through the sign of Gemini that's picking up steam right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that Jupiter and Gemini energy is kind of taking people through their highest, clearest, most open spaces and asking them to tap those so fully that it becomes the springboard to everything else.
So, you know what I'm wondering as you say that, because I love that, I get very excited, but then I go, well, are we by nature just hanging on tight to the old pain of the past and the dog-eat-dog kind of reality? Is that what a lot of people are doing right now?
Well, what happens with it, something like Jupiter and Gemini, is we do have a backlog of unlived lives, of unlived deaths, of unlived experience, and that backlog tends to make us resistant to the one thing that's being asked, which is to activate a willingness to be here and to really go into everything and move through everything, like a willingness, an enthusiasm, an edge. We tend to want to do that sporadically under best circumstances, but most of the time to act like things aren't going the way we would like them to go. And that's the ego complex that we have to cut through in order to find our way to the extraordinary joy of being linked up with who we will be in Aquarius throughout the next thousands of years.
So when you're saying the willingness to go there, is that like dropping in and realizing that you're the mortgage swindler, you're the thief, you're the abuser, that sort of stuff?
Yes, although because negative projection, critical mind, cynical overlay are so pervasive in the culture at this time, we always have to be careful about attributing blame and heavy scapegoating to any part of self or world. So if we're going to go into these confessions and these exposures and these candid disclosures, we have to have the safeguard of a certain container of a loving appreciation of who we really are. Otherwise, we trash ourselves.
Well, that makes sense, eh? But you know what I find is that I think one of the biggest, you said trash ourselves, one of the biggest traps is we're kind of contagious vibrationally, aren't we? So we pull it in through the media or through one another.
Yeah, well, that's our nature. We're permeable beings. We're psychically alive. We mm-hmm. just don't fully know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we experience some of the symptoms and consequences of it. But do we realize what an incredible joy it is to be able to participate in an expanding sense existence that has more space in it than it's ever had before and that's opening up as fast as we can allow it? That's the higher reality, the cosmic aspect, and that's here as well.
That's a portal, right?
Yes.
Now tell me this, is that when you say the cosmic, I'm going, are we ready to be multidimensional, consciously multidimensional? Is that what you're saying as well?
Yes. What happens when you do go multidimensional is you activate all these different selves, rooms, realms, facets of who you are, and they become alive, they become present, they become able to speak for themselves, they become able to move with themselves. And usually it's a very lonely vigil this last many years, because we've tried to reduce ourselves down to a very singular, very sparse, very, very almost nothing left kind of self. And when you go into a multidimensional space, those missing selves are restored, but not the same ones in the same ways. Mm. It's more like we get to give over the selves, the facets that we couldn't take with us any further, that had gotten too dense and too caught. And then we discover that there's far more where that came from, and that we have so many future selves that are trying to get through to us telepathically and basically to say, hey, join in here. We're going to do something different.
So we can actually step out of the great blobs of past consciousness. We can step away from a lot of
yes,
the past.
Yes, simply because we learn that we were making, I keep saying the same thing, but it's hard for this to fully penetrate, I know. We learn that we've been forgetting who we are, mm-hmm. while trying to be scientific and literal and to remember what happened in strict outer terms. We're sort of trying to be very, very literal these days in mm-hmm. having the record be straight. Mm-hmm. But the record isn't straight, because the missing part is who we are, and who we are is infinite. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen the way we think it did. All the tragedies that we project did not happen exactly the way we think, because we don't get that we were teaching ourselves through everything that happened, and we've been in here helping ourselves throughout to go through this experience. We're not alone. Somebody in us guides and orchestrates the experience, and they know what they're doing.
Well, so talking about who we are, we'd like you to take a few minutes right now and tell everybody who you are. Where have you come from, and how did you get this transcendent, vaulted perspective?
What happened to me was that I had three or four major, hugely life-altering events that each time changed the entire level of my existence. And the three such events that were super outstanding was at 22 years old, I ran into an absolutely wild, crazy, strange, streetwise man in New York City who kept forming communities around himself and was pretty delusional, but also was absolutely brilliant. This is a story of the 60s. And
what was his name, or can you share that?
His name was Tom Brooker.
Okay.
And he was well known in New York at the time, but not beyond. And essentially, he just generated this utopian community impulse, and I went for it hook, line, and sinker, and I learned so much about myself so fast that even when things didn't end well, which they never do in such groups, I was able to kind of bring it back around and start to get into the stars right away, and suddenly I found like I was a completely different person than I'd ever been before. And then that went on intensely until 1993. That was 69. Then in 93, my mate, my life companion, Sarah, died of breast cancer. Mm. And when she died, we had formed a vast community of friends attending the last phases, being very, very involved. And everybody was rooting very hard for her. She said she was going toward rebirth. And she was, and she took me with her, and I found myself, after the death, being in such a different state that it's taken me, 18 and a half years since to sort it out. And so I just took on a different name, took on a different life. I had been William Lonsdale, and I became Elias.
Why Elias?
Elias was a grace name from former lives that has to do with he who follows the stars.
And was Sarah also an astrologer and explorer?
She was very, very involved with it. But her thing was she was a massage therapist, and she could do incredible wellsprings alignments, these amazing transformational bodywork sessions with people. She worked with the body. Everything for her was very direct through the body. and through the arts. And then the third and last of these three huge shifts was that in 2008 and 2009, basically what happened was Mark Borax wrote a book about me called 2012, Crossing the Bridge to the Future, and it started to stir up a lot. And I also, my seventh child came, who's the most stunning of all, Savitri Sophia Gaia. And the combination of those, I was just flipped into doing, suddenly doing teleclasses and reaching out to the public. And this year, I'm finally fully doing that. And it was like a sudden metamorphosis, because I had been this retreat person in Hawaii for years with, you know, since retired, but I unretired and came back alive, and I've been doing that ever since.
So it sounds to me like what's happened is you've been opened to, you've kind of become the portal, right? And you've opened to that awareness of the cosmos through these. Do you think that most people awaken in trauma, in loss?
No, but I think that's a preliminary stage that's crucial. The awakening itself is what happens when you let go of the trauma, but that's what motivates you, because you have to do it, because your whole being, you know, is insistent, and it's hard to do it otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And just one other little astrological thing. In 1969, when the community consciousness was like everywhere, that was an astrological, or that can be explained astrologically as well as these days, can't it? Isn't there a similarity or a...
Well, what happened throughout the 60s, but particularly from 63 to 68, although it was still happening in 69, Uranus was conjunct Pluto.
Oh, okay.
And that was the launching of the future. What we did is we sampled what it might be like to live in the future, and then we returned to past, present time masquerading, past time masquerading as the present. And we've been in that ever since, and now the future is calling us extremely urgently, and our telepathic feelers are going off the charts with, what is this? What am I supposed to do here? What's coming toward me from this mysterious direction?
And the community consciousness is rising yet again after a certain amount of isolation.
This is the prophesied time. It's 1963 to 67, which is when we kind of got it, is now being reenacted. But it's in a very different way, because at that point it was all speculative, it was all imaginative, it was all play. Now we have to actually do it.
Yeah, I was pretty involved in those days as well. But it's interesting, because we all felt, I remember feeling like I'm going into myself to find out who I am before I come back out. And I think an awful lot of people are riding that kind of current as well. And it sounds like you have some version of that as well. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a very exciting time that we're in. And I don't even know where to go here. Okay, I love your story, and I loved hearing about Sarah, and we will get back to that. The rising of the feminine power, or the disturbance of what's been the collective thought process, is including the rising of the feminine to balance with the patriarchy, isn't it?
Yeah, the feminine is at the center of everything, and she guards the mysteries of the divine androgyny, which is the fusion of the polarities. We have to go through the feminine to find our way to the fusion of the genders.
Can you explain that a little more? I'm going, I have to think about this.
Because she has... when she goes into the feminine is essentially an interior responsive space. When she goes inside of that, she becomes open to what comes next. And there's two major shifts on the immediate horizon in terms of gender. The first is that the feminine comes into her own, and then it leads right away to her heralding, being a portal to the divine androgyny, because all polarities are going to have to become infinitely more collaborative and co-creative, so that we're not perpetually fighting rear guard battles, but we're moving forward.
I guess you can't even answer this, but I wonder how long it's going to take. I'm very interested in that.
The feminine revolution is continuing apace and shows no signs of waning. But the androgynous aspect, I think, is first suggesting itself to us these days. And it's going to take us a little while to get used to it. So probably we'll take about 12 years, a Jupiter cycle, to get really used to it. And the next time Jupiter goes around to Gemini, the sign of the divine androgyny, we might find ourselves, in 2024 to be really ready to do this the way it deserves. But first, we'll probably need about 12 years of intensive feminine, because I've been living in Kauai, which is a super feminine island, and I found that when you really go into the feminine, it's extremely conducive to deepening your feeling nature and heightening your ability to tune in, and those are crucial elements for what's coming.
Well, it could be less strident about going for leadership or ownership or dominance, eh?
Yes.
More community consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So can we see the rising of the feminine right now is perplexing to some of the women that I talk to. They're going, how come we're still, forgive the language, bitchy and competitive and all of that? How do we deal with that? Do you see some release in the astrological configurations for people to step out of those old bondages?
What's actually happened is that when the masculine caught wind of how he had blown it, many, many men started to cultivate the feminine. And when women started realizing what they had been left out of, they started to cultivate the masculine to give them the drive to do some stuff in the world that they wouldn't do otherwise. And everybody got a little bit hot-wired into going with their opposite polarity without people even fully realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so women have become the great masculine figures of our times, and men have become the great feminine figures of our times. This is an undeclared advance. And
what do you mean the men have become the great feminine? I feel like a lot of times men have been weakened terribly, and a lot of young boys don't really have a male leadership.
Well, I'm putting it in a particularly in a particularly positive mode. There is also, when you look at that in terms of the transition time, it is true that when a boy goes toward the feminine, he usually does it in a one-sided way, and he gets caught in some stuff. It's also true that when a woman goes toward, or a girl goes toward the masculine, she does it in a one-sided way, and she gets caught in a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very difficult transition, because it means you're making up for thousands of years in a period of a decade or something.
Well, we want to think that's possible, Elias, don't we?
I think it's not only possible, it's inevitable.
Oh, really? Okay, great. So the rising of the feminine is... We just need to keep praying it in, right, and getting with it, because the feminine is really a nurturing community conscious, is it not?
Yeah, and it has been difficult for some women to stay with their feminine because they have felt that it made them too vulnerable, too susceptible,
mm-hmm.
and that's a struggle women often go through these days.
Well, you can see why. I mean, it's... you know, to keep your head above water, if you're, for example, a woman who's a single mom, it takes an awful lot of elbow.
90% of the people I deal with are women.
Really?
And, almost all of them are going through similar stuff to each other. And what you're saying, yeah, it's incredible. It's like a woman has to have at least six different worlds that she's juggling constantly, and she has to somehow do it without looking like she's doing anything.
And look pretty at the same time,
yeah,
and get her
yeah,
nails
it's,
done
it's
every week.
It's wild. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, what I just said. If you go further into it, the challenges are tremendous.
Can you give us any guidance? And what's going on the planets about that? Are we getting a lot of help? Is it Venus?
What's happening is that there is a Neptunian current, Neptune in the sign of Pisces. And what it means is that we are sort of bottoming out from anything that we've tried to do in the past to try to plug things in, compensate, force it to work. And we're having to kind of come at things from a whole different place, like where we reconstitute our nature. It's my feeling that in the next years, the ones that will help the most are people who sort of come back from the dead, who come back from extreme experiences, and who've learned a lot from those experiences and can bring a fresh wind through, because we've got a lot of stale air circulating collectively, and we need fresh feelings, fresh awareness, fresh impulses.
Mm-hmm. We really do. I want to do two things. I want to do 40 things talking to you, but anyway, I'm going to talk a little bit about the election again. That the power of the vulnerability and the power of the feminine seems absolutely useless in the face of our politics these days, does it not?
Well, the politics is rigged. Like,
yes.
Every conspiracy theorist worth their salt would say that the politics is rigged, and the mm-hmm. politics is rigged.
Right.
And so part of the way it's set up in things like politics is it's calculated to discourage, disempower, and deceive people.
Right.
So what they're always trying to say is evolution won't go forward, nothing will avail, just forget it. We're in charge here, we're doing the old trip in the worst possible way, and you just have to suffer it. And that is a propaganda blitz. Mm-hmm. Ever since the Nazis learned to do everything through propaganda, that's all that any key government does, is do everything through propaganda, which means it has nothing to do with reality. It has only to do with what is being pretended. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that they have remotely the ability to throttle human evolution the way they say, but they try to convince people who are sensitive and vulnerable that they do, so as to back us down and make us think that it doesn't really matter, there's nothing we can do.
Well, to disempower us, right?
Yes.
But there's an awful lot of rising consciousness. I mean, it's terrific right now, isn't it?
Yes, people are getting the message, despite the fact that it's being conveyed collectively as though it doesn't mean anything.
Do you think the stars themselves and the planets radiate? You know, I'm so conscious that the vibrations are moving up and we're getting a lot more frequency boosts than we used to. You think the stars and planets radiate their frequencies and we pick that up and it imbues us with the kind of strength? And
yes. The way we see it in Star Genesis is the stars are not mechanistic and just kind of doing their thing. They're profoundly interactive with our own life wave. And so essentially when the stars make shifts, it doesn't mean that the stars do something to us. It's more like the star being in us comes to life.
Mm-hmm. So what is a star being?
A star being is one that holds a beacon light above them on their brow and above, and who steers by the light of the stars.
Aha. So that's those what you're calling the currents, right?
Yes.
That's the light that steers us?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a wonderful image. I also read something in your website, I believe, that's talked about the earth as, that we're here to be grown on the earth, is that right? So I felt like we were like plants and
yes.
Earth bounty. I've never thought of it that way before, that is responding to earth, to starlight. Would you say that?
Yeah.
It's a very magical image for me, anyway.
Sacred magic is the context in which I speak most of all. And from a sacred magical point of view, we're woven into the very essence of this earth existence. The earth is like a perfect, larger, containing vessel for everything that we're moving into. And the earth is much more permeable, pliable, open, spacious than we think of her when we're being scientific.
Hmm.
And those who have internal journeys into the heart of the earth in any form, report back always that they met a different kind of earth spirit than the one they would have expected.
Hmm. Wonderful. And that's a part of our cosmic nature, isn't it?
Yes. The earth is the deep core of what our cosmic nature has drawn to herself in order to really be here.
So I want to ask you about, when I first heard about you or was reading about you, and I have not read Mark Borax's book yet, forgive me for that. It sounds like it's very interesting, but I was thinking, do you do astrological, for example, readings on the journey of the soul past death or the journey of, no, you explained to me the difference between soul and spirit.
Back in 1978 to 1980, I had a real teacher in star work, star wisdom. His name was Willie Zucker in Meadow Vista, California. And he was at the late stages of a long career with Steiner orientation towards stars. And amazing man. And I learned many things, but most of all, I learned how to... imagine other charts besides the birth chart, and I've been working more and more ever since with that. He worked, for example, with a chart that he called the prenatal epoch or the cosmic conception chart.
Oh, wow, that sounds
exciting.
Up
for when you were conceived spiritually and has become a mainstay of my work ever since.
How wonderful.
And then other charts manifested too, such as the future activation chart, and there's a whole story with that. But he also, based on some things that Steiner had said, he drew up death charts for famous people where you know when they died. And he would he would then track back from the death chart in Saturn cycles of 7 years and Jupiter cycles of 12 years and other cycles back to key events in the life that couldn't have been seen in the light of the death chart until someone died, but nonetheless turn out to be pivotal ways to track with destiny. And so essentially the death chart became an open portal to many things, how to see what someone goes through after death, mm-hmm. how to connect with them, and how to understand their life in the retrospective of how it ended up.
Hmm.
And so, yes, there is something to that whole thing you're talking about, especially because my whole journey is keyed to working with those who've come to the inside or been twice born or awoken after death. We did a book about it, the Book of Theana, mm-hmm. and it's so much what I am is that work, is that way of weaving.
Well, and the Book of Theana is a dialogue with Sarah.
Yes.
And very channeled, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I had been tuning in since 1986, and I would tune in and she would write it down. And then when she died, I became both the stenographer. Well, I became the stenographer, really, and she spoke and I wrote it down.
Hmm. And it's what it teaches me a lot about is the movement of the soul through existence on the other side. And do you going back to, this might be redundant, but are you able to chart that astrologically?
Well, yes, because, for instance, if you have an actual death chart for someone, with the time of death,
mm-hmm.
and you plot it out as a death chart, what will happen is, for instance, Venus will be in a certain position, and that position will show you something of what the soul will go through in the Venus sphere after death.
Oh, I see. How interesting. Well, and the other thing that occurs to me, always looking for the transcendence if I can, is that it sort of tells how, for example, Sarah and you and Sarah will emerge from the traps of memory and past. Is that right? And so that you can recreate a new...
Yes.
Journey?
Yes.
It's very, very interesting work, isn't it?
It's my whole life. It's just become that because I feel the collective urgent need for an alternative a completely alternative way to perceive things and move with things.
That's wonderfully revolutionary, which I like. So talk about future, what did you call it, future activation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that's part of the same scenario, isn't it?
Yeah, what happened there was that, some years ago I had a dream, and in the dream I was giving a talk to a bunch of people, and I was talking to them about the three charts and laying all the stuff about the three charts. I woke up and I said, what's the third chart? And then I got guided that there was a third chart besides the prenatal and the natal, which we call the future activation chart, which is as much forward from the birth as the prenatal is backward from the birth. And the future activation chart turns out to be a really key innovation because it gives you a feeling for what your future selves are trying to guide you toward and how to move with the full spaciousness of your greater potential.
How can people connect to their future self? I always love to give them something from you that they can use.
Most of all, it's a matter of having an experience that somebody inside, not outside, but that somebody inside is gently, quietly trying to get your attention, mm-hmm. has a very, very generous, spirited, bright, multidimensional point of view, and you just sort of start to, by bits and pieces usually for most people, to open to that, to allow that, to imagine that, to conceive that, and then they can do so much more so fast if you just leave the door open.
Do you have some experiences with that you can share?
Yeah, well, for me, the most important part of that is what's happened in the last 3 years. The last 3 years have been a wild ride, especially in this regard, because I was aware that the future would be opening before it happened. But when it started to happen in 2008, 2009, 2010, I was astounded to find what I could do with it, because it felt like a force was so winged, so inspirational, so magical, so vast, and was taking hold of me and was taking me further and further and further into what is coming into being, and sort of bringing me out of the gloom and doom of people's, you know, very mechanistic, repetitive sense of the past. And so it was like a huge breath of fresh air. And what basically started to happen is, ever since I really got woken up in that vein, it doesn't really matter to me what anybody says or does about how screwed up the world is and how everything's awful. I don't feel it that way. I feel it that we're in this immense fermentive beginning of a completely new reality that will be unfolding for thousands of years, the age of Aquaria, and I'm inside of its consciousness mode, which is so all-encompassing and integrative and connected up and transmutational. And so to me, it's, you know, it's leaning into the wind of the future and letting it inspire me and empower me and bring me out of all negative, droning, endless thought patterns.
That's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah.
So do you feel, tell me about your children. I don't want to be prying into their lives, but are they freer as a result? Is this to be free of our past, that weight from the past and our legends and all of that would be just a delight. I often think about that. Vision about that, actually.
One of the things that's happened is that when a child has come to us before they were born, we would know about them, we would know who they were, we would know about past lives and what they bring, and it would help tremendously because we would kind of know how to move with them right away.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened is that at this time, Savitri, our youngest, is going to be 4 in October, and all the others are 7, 9, 10, going on 11. The boys, they're getting on in age enough so that you can start to see results, fruits, harvest. And basically everybody is in a different space. They don't fully know it yet, but they're in a different space than people their age, especially, and grown-ups always notice this a lot, people who can tune into it, they're freer, they're much more empowered, they're much less likely to really go against themselves, even though they have their trips, and they know what they can do.
Hmm. And it's just that you have raised them into the reality of the truth of who they are.
Yes, and secondarily true, but primarily what it is that they've raised themselves, that they're, and they raise each other, they've got it all in them.
So they know their gifts, for example.
Yeah, they'll share dreams that are stunning. They will share inner experiences that are remarkable, not all the time. They have revelatory things going on, and they're, you know, the lines aren't cut.
Hmm. And so if we were to impose your wisdom on children, like what about school? Are they homeschooled?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're about to move from many years in Hawaii, well over 8 years, to Colorado. And we've been in one kind of situation. We're going into another. We'll see what that's like.
Okay.
But we've been in, there's no good schools around here, so we weren't even tempted.
Mm-hmm. I just thought that having the freedom from the collective, or it seems like that's a part of the deal anyway, is a certain amount of freedom from the collective.
Yes.
Pain.
Yes.
Why Colorado?
We long for the mountains.
Aha. That's a simple reason. It also probably feels right.
And yeah, so, we do.
Yeah, and there's, so shifting, I'm very, very, I don't mean to harangue about the children, it's just I'm very interested in how we can learn and expand and open and then really help our children have that leg up, you know? So
To me, the thing with children is that they have two functions in them that are so strong that grown-ups have gotten very weak in, which is imagination and feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're around children all the time, you feel your own imagination soaring and your own feeling nature stirred up. And if you can handle that, it's an incredible thing because you're right back in the same territory they're in, because any given age you're at is very relative.
Mm-hmm. Because you still have your child inside.
Yes.
Well, most of us have talked about how we had to break free from our conditioning and so on. It would be really nice to help the children into what you're calling the age of Aquaria. Why Aquaria, not Aquarius?
Because it's feminine.
Aha! Perfect. All right, I have a couple of notes here I want to check. Yes, let's talk briefly about a few of the notes that we came up with when we were talking on the phone the other day. We were talking about earthbound souls and cosmic spirits. We've kind of covered that, but I think there's a bit more to say.
What I see is that people are having a very hard time in the depths of their soul life. They're having an extraordinary time in the heights of their spirit life, and I differentiate the two. The soul is the one in this incarnation. Spirit is who we are beyond any given lifetime, and the one that's in this incarnation tends to be struggling with the personal, the human, the mortal, the apparent, and it can be very intense depending on many factors. The spirit path that is unfolding in a vaster way is equally very resonant and really calls to us and takes us places. And what most people have to struggle with is the integration of and the linking of these two worlds. And to me, that's the art form of our times. It's the healing art form of our times.
Is linking the soul and the cosmic spirit?
Yes, basically not viewing them dualistically as cut off into two separate worlds, but rather as two infinite sides of the same mandala.
And what I'm understanding is that the soul is what reruns the old reactions, is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But we don't have to do that, so that's the big...
No, in fact, the soul is supported by tremendous earth forces once we get connected with fairy, with the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, the mineral kingdom. There are so many beings here and worlds that can help us even right in this existence.
Right
now.
In the third dimension, huh?
Yes.
Wow, so I'll be narcissistic here. Did you see anything in my chart?
Yeah. I see something in everybody's chart. But in your chart, the way I'll put it, to put it in this universal framework we're talking about here, I would say that the path lies in what we make of our, what I call mental consciousness. Mm-hmm. Can we turn the mental consciousness to serve the intuitive consciousness? Can we up-level the mental consciousness so it's not in a flat line, but where we're actually seeing who we're becoming as we become it, and tuning into that, observing ourselves, being there in the observer-witness consciousness, and able to then, you know, feed that back into the vehicle. I feel like that's what you're continually dealing with, and you have real capacities in that direction.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a pretty good thing to tell me. It gives me a lot of work to continue doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it resonates with me. Your work is very exciting. So let's talk about, and thank you for that, Elias.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the classes that you're, the teleclasses that are up and coming, and also the Christ letters.
Yes. We have two main things coming up. First of all, we're doing teleclasses starting September 6th. For four Thursdays, which will be on the West Coast at 6 p.m., and you can figure out other timings from there.
Mm-hmm.
And so these Thursdays at 6 p.m. West Coast. And we're going to do two-hour sessions on, you know, with all of the technological advances that exist these days with such context. And we're, you know, very full on. And we're going to take hundreds of people through a planetary initiation.
Wow.
Which we're calling 2012 now. And I'm still forming it inside. The way it works is I'll only fully know the moment we start, you know.
When you say take people through, is that teaching them astrologically or taking them through intuitively and visionarily?
For the last 5 months, the approach that we're taking is to activate planetary forces rather than talk about them.
Okay.
So the whole thing is to create a kind of sacred ritual atmosphere, a sacred space within which we can all together move with Uranus, really get it activated in our own lives and relate it to Pluto and all the rest, you know, that way.
Wow. So it's like really cosmic community.
Yes.
Or star community, I suppose, eh?
And these will be the first time I've even remotely done that in a teleclass. I did some minimal stuff years ago, but this will be the full-on version.
Boy, are we ready for that, aren't we?
We sure are. We need it.
Yeah.
And then in December, we're coming out with a book called The Christ Letters. And that book, how shall I describe it to you? Let's just say that you didn't have either a bias for Jesus Christ or a bias against. You didn't have any karma with the Catholic Church or anything, which would be about one person on the planet.
And
who
is that
they are,
person?
I don't know. If you could be in that position, you would view Christ entirely differently than you do through the history of religion. And the Christ that we're resurrecting in this book is the real living Christ, not the one that people flagellate themselves around. And so I essentially think we all need the Christ within us to be ignited so that we can come to who we really are, and that's what the book's about. It's a very rich, rich, full meal.
Is it a channeled book?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you're the channel?
Yeah, the same source as the Book of Theana, a being who has many names, Theana, Vivian, May Ama, and Hoti, and she was Sarah in her life.
Mm.
Same being. She's not the source of all of our material, but she is the source of this book, yes.
That sounds so wonderful, and that's coming out in December?
Yes.
I want to go back to your classes just for a moment. Is it going to be a part of the class, the people that sign in, are you going to, are they going to need to know, are they going to help understanding the configurations of their own chart and how it relates to the collective Uranus, for example?
I don't think we're going to have a few enough people to do it like that. I think what we're going to have to do is to bring it in such a way that people will find total relevance in the larger picture, and I will give some keys so that people can track with their own charts if they need to. But it's not so much that, it's more like, can you get the bigger wave now and move with it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a macro level, although each one is of course in their own particular vibration with it.
I just think it's very exciting to be doing that. That really touches my heart to be, you know, doing that community that way.
Yeah, well, you know, what it is that I can't stand to have us fall for so much stuff and not get with the program. To me, the term that just came to me was, I have a friend who always talks about getting instructions from headquarters, you know, virtually. And I got it that I would call it heart quarters.
Oh, good.
And that I'm getting kind of strong instructions from heart quarters that we really need to revive our hearts.
I love that. In fact, I was talking to a really good astrology friend about an hour ago. We were talking about that being one of the biggest difficulties, especially when, it, you know, this cycling back to the rising of the feminine, it's that heart that keeps women separated, isn't it? The very thing that we have so graciously inside keeps us separated because of fears and experience.
Yeah, well, it seems like the heart is the most vulnerable place of all, and it is. But I wish we had a different collective readout on being vulnerable, because to me, especially Uranus and Aries is trying to change that. Mm-hmm. We need to get it that being vulnerable is a kind of raw material for being changed, being opened, being quickened. And we just have such a fear and such a fuss about being vulnerable. And I understand it, given what people have gone through, but I still say we're going to have to be really trusting and open to make it to the other side of this of this fish's age, Aquarian age transition.
Yeah, I always think vulnerability is required. We can't really get anywhere unless we become vulnerable.
We can't get around the fact that our heart is a blazing open heart.
Mm-hmm. And we want that.
So, yes, I do want to feel things. I don't want to be spared feeling things. I've learned that.
Yeah.
You know, the male usually chooses it the other way, but it doesn't work very well.
Well, you're of the new order, aren't you?
I better be, because if I'm not, who's going to be? I mean, we've got to get on with this thing now. We are going to make some choices at the crossroads in the next few months that will determine a lot of the future.
You bet.
It's not on the external, it's on the internal. We have to take our own souls into a new creation, a new co-creation.
That's a wonderful piece to leave us with. Tell people how to get hold of you and how to participate in your classes.
Yes, there's three ways to get hold of me. One is my two phone numbers, which I'll give first, being Mr. Non-Tech personally. my number I'm talking from, my home phone number, is 808-822-7878. My voicemail in California is 831-425-3134. And so that's that level. Second level, I have a website called stargenesiswisdom.com. It has much information on it and shows where you can sign up for these classes and everything to do with them. And then the third way is to send me telepathic messages. And since I don't do email, I do T-mail. And if you send me a T-mail message, I might get it a lot quicker than any other way.
I call it U-mail, universal mail. But, well, this is so wonderful. I've really enjoyed this, and I want to ask you a lot more questions. So I'm hoping you'll come back on.
Yeah, we had talked to the possibility of doing one of these again shortly before the classes, since we originally were going to do the classes a little sooner, and now it's been time bumped to September 6th for a lot of good reasons, but it might be nice to talk just before that.
I think that's exactly what we're going to set up. By then I'll have even more questions for you. Thank you so much, Elias. It's just been marvelous and, inspirational to feel that we really are a portal to a shift into a much more oh, I don't know, win-win reality, eh? Magical reality.
Yes, we just have to imagine that our dreams are not given to us arbitrarily and that our dreams will bring us true, will come true.
And we can all go together.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in and listening. This has been Elias speaking about astrology. I want to say astrology, but that's a small word compared to all that he's been talking about, transcendence. You can look up the various lists of books that he's already written and learn about books that he's yet completing on stargenesiswisdom.com. My name's Veronica Entwistle. I thank you for listening in. If you'd like to be in touch with me for feedback on this show or suggestions of guests or having a session with me or with Elias, Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com. And much love to everyone. Thank you for listening.